Australian True Crime. The live show is coming.
Tired of ads interrupting your gripping investigations? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Ads shouldn't be the scariest thing about true crime. Start listening by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/truecrimeadfree. That's amazon.com/truecrimeadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot. We charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right. We're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
Finding your perfect home was hard, but thanks to Burrow, furnishing it has never been easier. Burrow's easy-to-assemble modular sofas and sectionals are made from premium, durable materials, including stain and scratch-resistant fabrics. So they're not just comfortable and stylish, they're built to last. Plus, every single Burrow order ships free right to your door. Right now, get 15% off your first order at burrow.com/ACAST. That's 15% off at burrow.com/ACAST.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more. With Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. quince.com/style.
The producers of this podcast recognise the traditional owners of the land on which it's recorded. They pay respect to the Aboriginal elders past, present, and those emerging.
The following podcast contains content of a graphic, violent nature and is not suitable for children.
It's one of those rare cases where you have a three-year-old girl that disappears on the 12th of January 1970, and 16 and a half months later, a young person comes forward, states that he's responsible for her disappearance and subsequent homicide, and we take it to the court. There's an argument in relation to the legality of the confession, and that's overruled by Justice Hume at the Supreme Court, and we couldn't progress any further.
Some of you might recognise the name and voice of this episode's guest. It's retired New South Wales Police Detective Sergeant Damien Loon, who featured on Hedley Thomas's extraordinary podcast, The Teacher's Pet. Damien doggedly investigated the 1982 disappearance of Sydney mum Lynette Dawson for years, bringing the case to two coronial inquests. Lynette's former husband, Chris Dawson, was charged with her murder in 2018 and is awaiting trial. Damien has worked big, hard cases. He was one of the first officers on the scene at the Lindt Cafe siege in Sydney in 2014, where a lone gunman held hostage 10 customers and 8 employees over 16 hours. Damien features again in another major podcast that's gripped listeners' attention worldwide, just like The Teacher's Pet did. It's the excellent BBC Sounds multi-episode podcast Fairy Meadow, about three-year-old Cheryl Grimmer's haunting disappearance from Fairy Meadow Beach in Wollongong in 1970. And if you haven't already, listen to our episode with Ricky Nash, Cheryl's big brother, who was 7 years old at the time she went missing and heartbreakingly has never stopped blaming himself for what happened to her. Damien and a man called Frank Sanvitale, who you'll also hear us speak with on a separate episode, were the detectives who, in 2016, took another look at Cheryl's disappearance. Little did they know the events that would unfold. It was Damien who called Ricky Nash in 2016 to tell him there'd been a breakthrough in his sister Cheryl's murder. It was the first time Ricky had ever heard a police officer use the word murder rather than disappearance or abduction. It was a defining moment. Cheryl's case had gone nowhere for more than 45 years at that point. While combing through dusty boxes of documents in storage, Damien found a confession made in 1971 by a then 17-year-old. It contained compelling information they believed only the person who abducted Cheryl would know. This set in motion events that would see that person, who we can only identify as Mercury, charged with Cheryl's murder in 2017. Nothing had ever happened with the confession before. The youth was, unbelievably to Damien, never charged. The confession was referenced fleetingly in the 2011 inquest into Cheryl's disappearance, and that 25 investigators had been unable to locate Mercury. Locating Mercury took Damien and Frank Sanvitale just 3 hours. But in 2019, a judge ruled the confession of Mercury as a then 17-year-old could not be used as evidence after all, because there was no parent, adult, or lawyer present with him when he made his statement. This law wasn't in place in 1971 when Mercury confessed, but the judge said it should be applied retrospectively. Without this confession, there wasn't enough evidence to proceed with the trial, and Mercury walked free again. Damien recently retired after 35 years of distinguished service. He said he knew it was time to call it a day. He has no doubts about who abducted and murdered little Cheryl and still holds hope that this man will face court. A listener warning, there's some distressing content discussed in this episode.
A lot of our listeners will know your name very well, as do we, from the Teacher's Pet podcast and the Lynn Dawson case. Can you believe it?
Yeah, well, look, it's one of those things that I've always said, never not answer a telephone because you never know what the next day is going to bring. But that was an old job back from 97, and I was given that brief to look at, and it just snowballed from there. And eventually in 2015, the Unsolved Homicide Squad took the brief from me, and I did some more work on it, obviously, and then I charged him after years of fighting with the DPP to have him indicted, which they wouldn't do. They've somehow managed to twist that around and find an indictment for him. So he's before, I believe, the courts at this stage. I don't know when it is scheduled. There was some issues about a stay application and also I think a high court challenge, it may be. I don't know.
Yeah. But, well, someone had to sit down and read, I think it was how many thousands of pages of transcripts from that podcast. I know that had to happen. So, that was part of it. There's been a lot of hearings, but I believe so far so good. It's progressing.
I believe so. I think May was the date for a trial. So, I'm just waiting to hear.
Yeah, I bet you are. And when you found out that there was going to be a podcast about the Cheryl Grimmer case, what did you think?
These matters should never die. You know what I mean? They should never go away. And I think by having some public input and outcry about what happened to Cheryl is probably a good thing. Many, many years ago, as a young constable, you know, we were told not to talk to the media and say very brief statements. And, you know, I don't think that really, really works for me because I've always found the media to be on my side. Sometimes good and bad, but more or less have always assisted me in things I've needed to do. And I'm not surprised at Cheryl because it's very much like the Madeleine McCann issue over in London. And this is no different from a little girl that disappears in Australia back in the 70s. And through what Ricky's gone through and the family has gone through, and unfortunately, like the Dawson brief, both parents have gone to their grave not knowing what happened to their daughter. Mm.
Yeah, and it's a shame that it's requiring a sort of a campaign of shame, honestly, to get some progress in both cases.
Yeah, look, I've said this from day one, when I was a young detective, I was given a fairly big range to do things outside the square. I've always believed in that, and I've always believed that the media and the community are the police, and the police are the community. So we work together. And we try and put our heads together because sometimes it's just impossible for a single officer or just maybe a couple of officers to do all the work that we're required to do. It's very time consuming and there is a lot of work. But I wasn't surprised. And I know that there was a podcast from the BBC, I believe, mm-hmm. About this as well. But if it assists the family or it assists in the offender being brought to justice, then I'm all for it.
Yeah, the BBC podcast, Fairy Meadow, is stunning. It's such a great piece of work. And, I mean, it just highlights a story that's incredible, like literally incredible. If you read it as a script, if it was a TV show, you'd think, oh, come on, that's ridiculous. That could never happen. A family could never be let down so many times over so many decades by so many different institutions within the legal system. Now, I asked this question of Frank, and I'm going to ask it of you now. Have you ever seen anything like it in your life?
No. No, it's one of those rare cases where you have a three-year-old girl that disappears on the 12th of January 1970, and 16 and a half months later, a young person comes forward with crucial information, states that he's responsible for her disappearance and subsequent homicide, and told in fine detail. And we take it to the court. There's an argument in relation to the legality of the confession, and that's overruled by Justice Hume in the voir dire at the Supreme Court. And it, I agreed with the Crown at the time that we couldn't progress any further if that evidence was inadmissible.
Did you? That's fascinating, because I was shocked. I am shocked that the DPP would encourage an arrest if that was the only piece of evidence strong enough to proceed with.
Well, we arrested him, and I obtained within the police force legal assistance in relation to our brief of evidence, mm-hmm. and we're given the green light to proceed with the arrest. So the DPP basically were then forced to take on the brief, because we've presented the brief to the Crown, and it's gone through the subsequent lower court proceedings. He was committed to stand trial to the Supreme Court for that offence, and it passed ticked all the boxes in relation to the evidence that we had obtained, that there was enough evidence there that a jury would be satisfied upon conviction.
Hmm. But you weren't shocked that there wasn't enough evidence without the confession?
Well, that's the evidence that we have obtained through that confession was overwhelming, I believe.
Yeah.
And for that record of interview to be not admitted into evidence, that's the crux of our investigation, was based solely on that record of interview.
Yeah.
So all the evidence we'd gathered through the 8 pages of this young person, this person called, whom I call Mercury, his confession, we set out to and don't forget, we're outside the box, and we didn't have our blinkers on. We set out to either A, prove that he's telling the truth, or B, that he's lying.
Yeah.
And we found that everything he told us was true, because there was evidence, obviously, that the child had disappeared. Mm. Certain people had seen certain things that day. But even when we went over to Nottingham to interview Mavis Goodyear and her daughter, that was overwhelmingly the evidence obtained from that, just that single interview, was put out our person Mercury at the scene.
And that was the wife and child of Peter Goodyear, who was well known to be a witness at the time of Cheryl's disappearance.
Well, he was the allegedly only person that saw a person carry young Cheryl, or we don't know if it was Cheryl, carry a young person away towards the car park back in that afternoon of 12th of January 1970. So was it Cheryl? We don't know. Because on that particular day, others left the beach in a hurry, and as far as much during our initial investigation, at a later stage towards the arrest, a male came forward and said, well, he was at the beach 49 years ago to that day, and he'd never told police, but he picked up his young fair-haired daughter and walked across the car park with her in her arms.
Yeah. Mm. Yeah. Yeah. Frank was telling us about the fact the, what's it called, a southerly buster?
Yes.
Yeah.
Common, quite common down that area on the Illawarra.
Yeah. So it was chaos. It just happened. Another one of these terrible parts of the coincidences. It's that Swiss cheese theory, isn't it? That's like, unfortunately, the way things lined up in this case, it lined up perfectly for this potentially for this offender to have gotten away with it twice?
You know, I was lost for words, but the hardest part is in trying to explain that to the family on a legal technicality, and they just don't understand, unfortunately.
No, they don't.
How do you console a family like that who had been fairly thick with us throughout the whole inquiry, and we were very honest with them, we're straightforward. It's no use sugarcoating something terrible that happened. If I'm going to get assistance from the family, then I always believe being straight up and honest with them from the beginning, because otherwise you won't have that rapport or trust with them.
Did you see the legal technicality coming? Like, you know, that real bloody twist that happened, because at the time of the confession, Mercury's confession, you did not need an appropriate adult in the room at that time, and then you have to.
Well, that's right. And it wasn't enacted till 6 years later that came into legislation about a support person being present for a person under the age of 18 years. So in that era, and we canvassed this, that the confession was taken rightly, mm-hmm. and it was recorded correctly. And I didn't see that coming at all until it was raised in the voir dire at the Supreme Court.
Yeah, and Mercury at no time has suggested, and his legal team at no time have suggested, that anything appropriate occurred even in the room other than that. Like, there's no suggestion that the confession was coerced or he was intimidated or anything like that. It's very much the technicality that there was no appropriate adult in the room.
Yeah, and that's one of the aspects of that confession as well. I think it's also the mental state of this Mercury. But no, as far as we were concerned, and that was canvassed during our when we put in for the file to go to our legal services department for their comment, and it was basically told us, no, that was fine. It was above board. And it was done correctly in that era. So for this to be then, you know, retrospectively applied many years later, well, that's a disappointment. But
it's a shock. No. It's a great shock. So what do you do after that as a copper? I mean, we know that Frank retired, or he left on mental health grounds, and this was a very big part of that decision. And he's obviously still struggling with that, and but you continued on in the service for some time. You're retired now though, right?
Yes, I retired in July last year.
Oh, okay, so still quite new to retirement. How are you going? How are you going with that?
I'm not used to it, to be honest with you. I was just pretending I'm on long service leave for, because it's quite bizarre, because where I retired at, I was sort of the boss of the detectives in the Inverell, Glen Innes, and I was a detective sergeant there. So I had a lot of input, we had a lot of travelling to do, a lot of inquiries. The on-call aspect I don't miss, but it's one day you're getting phone calls at 3 a.m. and the next day you're not, and it's bizarre.
What was your tipping point, Damien, or what was the reason that you just thought, yeah, I'm done?
Well, I'd had a bit of an issue. I was at the Link Cafe siege many years prior to that, and that was a terrible day. And for my own reasons, I just took some time out to get my headspace together, came back, and then was offered that opportunity at Wollongong to cast some fresh eyes over the Strike Force Wessel, which is Cheryl Grimmin's disappearance. And then that fell over eventually back in 2019. And so I've been in the COPS by that stage about 35 years. So I thought, well, it's time for someone else to take over the reins. And, yeah.
Mm-hmm. I mean, it's a hard decision to make, but it has to be made at some point, doesn't it? You know, you have to walk away one day.
Well, 2 weeks prior to retiring, I had a murder-suicide while I was working on it. A week before I retired, I was doing the autopsies for both. And you know, a week later, then you're retiring, you're not there anymore. So, and I thought, well, now it's probably time to go now. Yeah.
Yeah, but retirement's got to be every bit as difficult as that in some ways, because it's your passion.
I loved every minute of it. Yeah. I loved every minute of it. I was passionate about what I did. I loved working with people. I loved helping people. That was one of my driving forces to be a cop in the first place. Mm. And then suddenly to have all that in front of you, and then suddenly the week after, nothing happens. It's a real, I don't think I transitioned properly into retirement. Maybe if I had done a bit of homework prior, I might be still going, but However, life goes on.
When you're ready to pop the question, the last thing you want to do is second-guess the ring. At BlueNile.com, you can design a one-of-a-kind ring with the ease and convenience of shopping online. Choose your diamond and setting. When you find the one, you'll get it delivered right to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off your purchase. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot, we charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right. We're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
If you thought the only way to get a more defined jawline with natural-looking results was through surgery, think again. Juvederm Volux XC is a non-surgical injectable gel filler that improves moderate to severe loss of jawline definition and can help you achieve natural-looking results with little downtime. Even better, this improved definition lasts up to 1 year with optimal treatment. No maintenance required. Improve jawline definition for a smooth, sculpted look with Juvederm Volux XC. For important safety information and to find a licensed specialist, visit Juvederm.com. That's Juvederm.com. Not for people with severe allergic reactions, allergies to lidocaine, or the proteins used in Juvederm. Common side effects include injection site redness, swelling, pain, tenderness, firmness, lumps, bumps, bruising, discoloration, or itching. There's a risk of unintentional injection into a blood vessel, which can cause vision abnormalities, blindness, stroke, temporary scabs, or scarring. Talk to a licensed specialist to find out if it's right for you.
Do you have any other cases? Is Cheryl the one for you, like she is for Frank?
Look, I think Cheryl's probably the at the end of the day. I thought the other matter that's before the court was very important as well with the family.
Lynn,
I think
Dawson.
It's all because it's all about the family, as far as I'm concerned, giving them answers and trying to give them closure. And I think Cheryl was very, very special because those three boys were very young when she went missing. And Ricky's bore the brunt of that throughout his life, feeling responsible for her disappearance. And I think he copped a fair bit of, you know, a fair bit of flack from his, particularly his father, which I can gather that happened. But to bring about closure. Now, some days we cannot always solve something, you know, but we can give the family at least a bit of peace and enclosure. And if we can do that, then I think I've done my job. And I think at some stage when I retired, I think I'm at the end of the day, I think I like to think that I help someone along the way, and I think I did. And I think
you've
Cheryl
done so
was
much,
very important.
You've done so much, you know, you people like you look at things and deal with things so the rest of us don't have to, can just go about our business and can ignore things, frankly, you know, not have to look at ugly things and scary things and the reality of life and what's actually going on at 3 a.m. So, you know, you've definitely done a service, given so much to the community. And there was a moment in the Teacher's Pet podcast that was just so profound for me. Really helped me, I think, understand the families of missing people. Like in this Fairy Meadow podcast, there was that moment that Ricky talks about when you phoned him that first time when he was driving and you said, "Can you pull over, please? I've got to tell you something." Do you remember that moment?
Yes, I do, yes.
And do you remember what you said to him?
I believe that we'd identified a suspect and the matter and the cause of a death.
But do you remember your exact words? We've found a suspect or a person of interest in Cheryl's murder.
Yes.
The significance, of course, was that he said, "What the fuck? I've never thought of it as a murder before."
That's right. He just thought, yes, that's right.
you know?
She disappeared.
That's like
yeah,
so huge because we just, the rest of us just think, what do you mean? Like at that stage, you've been 47 years or something and everybody else is going, what do you mean, Ricky, in our minds?
Yeah.
And to him, that was like a lightning bolt when you said that.
And it was. And I remember his reaction. And but as I said, because I've always had this part of my DNA, being a cop, was always to be upfront and honest with your victims of crime. Mm. And even offenders sometimes too. Being honest with them as well. Tell them that the outcome that they should expect, et cetera. But telling Ricky that was difficult to tell him because, as you've just recalled, that he didn't ever... The word murder was never mentioned.
Did you think, like, when you use the word, you'd think, oh, yeah, like, obviously they are thinking that that's a possibility. Were you kind of shocked by Ricky's reaction?
Yeah, look, probably I was because the fact that I probably presumed that he just thought that that's what happened to his sister.
Yeah. Somewhere along
and it
the
was
line.
Always... It was always the headlines back in the 70s was about, you know, this girl's been abducted or whatever, et cetera. So there's never a very good outcome with abductions.
And then in Teacher's Pet, the moment when they were describing other members of the family, not the Dawson family, Lynn's family.
Yes.
Were talking about her father's funeral and her mum, that was the moment for her mum. Her mum was looking at the door through the entire ceremony.
Seeing she'd walk through.
Because her mum just thought, there's no way Lynn would not be here for this. Her mum thought, okay, maybe she's this bullshit story that they'd been told that Lynn's run away with a religious group or something. And her mum just, of course you want to believe that, I guess. But her mum thought, yeah, maybe she'd leave her kids. Maybe she wouldn't call me for years. Maybe this and that. But there's just no way she wouldn't come home for her dad's funeral. And that was the moment, that was the hour, that was the day her mum knew she was never coming back. It was so powerful.
And very, very upsetting, no doubt, for the family. Yeah. And, you know, all these years later, well, hopefully at some stage, if there's going to be an inquiry into this, into the court, we may have an outcome. I don't know. But
so frustrating so frustrating that you haven't been able to find Lynn's remains. I mean, there are any number of frustrations in these matters, aren't there?
Yeah, and that's one of the most difficult aspects of these old-type cold cases. Mm. And since I've been, since I moved from the city out to the bush, I've done a number of cold case reviews for other regions as well, and I've come to the conclusion that was there wasn't a suspect, or the coroner found an open finding, and I sort of went along with the coroner as well because there just wasn't the evidence there to pinpoint or point a finger at somebody. And some remains were found and some weren't, and some of these matters are reinvestigated. So you've got to have an open book on these cases. You've got to think outside the square, and as I said, with the Grimmer matter, that was very important about Mavis Goodyear's recollection of knowing that her husband was outside sitting on the brick wall was very important to us because Mercury states in his record of interview back in May of 1971 that he saw a male sitting on the wall.
Mm. Was it the one in orange shorts? Was that the reference?
No, there was a male sitting on a brick wall outside the ladies' portion of the changing rooms. Mm. And we went to Nottingham to interview Mavis. And a week before that, Frank and I sat in on a day lecture about cognitive interviewing and recalling memories. It was a training day for the detectives at Wollongong. And over in Nottingham, they have a very passive interview room. You wouldn't know it's an interview room. It's just full of couches. And in the very corner, there's a small camera and a microphone. And I just sat with Mavis in this interview room, and Frank was in the other room with the other police from Nottingham checking the audios, et cetera. And basically she went into a very relaxed mode. And I said, well, take yourself back to that time when you're in the showers with your two daughters, you know, in the changing room. And if you can take yourself back to your own childhood, basically Besser Block's buildings with an open air portion of the changing rooms. And you know, if you go back to the old surf club days when I was in a surf, that's what they were like back in those days.
Yep.
And just jumped in for a quick cold shower or whatever and off you went. Hmm. And she said, I can recall Peter being outside, because the most telling aspect of this was the evidence that she could smell his cigarette smoke.
Ah.
He smoked a particular type of cigarettes which she recognised, and he had to be close to where they were having a shower, and we're saying it's outside, because the smoke wafted in through this besser block and through the open air and she could smell it. That was really, really important to us. And it was like a light bulb moment when she said that. And you don't know until you get these people into that sort of state of mind to take your mind back on it. She closed her eyes and sat back in the chair and she went, oh, my goodness, I could smell his cigarette smoke.
Wow.
And that puts him there, because that's evidence. That's smell. That's something you can't be taken away from you.
Between that and the bubbler.
Yeah.
You know, there's just some incredible moments from that confession.
That water bubbler was a very, very strong point for us as well.
It was amazing.
What did it feel like? I keep imagining, you know, when you found that confession in that box, in the archives, I just think, fuck. Oh, sorry.
No, that's all right. I kept thinking, we all do,
wow, just imagine that feeling. Mm. And Frank described, you know, you'd wave stuff if it was of significance to each other. But what did you think? Like, what was your copper gut just saying to you when you found that?
Look, I think it was a late Friday afternoon, and we'd been working on this brief for quite a few months. And to get you just around the brief, you've got to read everything. And prior to that, it hadn't been transferred electronically onto our investigative system. So Frank and I split up the boxes of evidence, and I said, I'll take these boxes, you take those boxes, and we'll just get cracking. So every day from 7 to 5, we're typing away and entering a product onto our investigative system. Mm. And by that stage, I'd read a fair bit of the brief, and it was late Friday afternoon, I think it was, out comes this record of interview. I'm turning the page, and I've picked it up and I've read it.
God.
Well, I couldn't believe it. I couldn't believe what I was reading. Then I wanted to read as to why that wasn't enacted on, and I read the following, what they called running sheets in those days, where it's an investigative note attached to the file. And when I read the aspect about the bubbler, what she was wearing when she walked up from the beach, who she was with, where Mr. Peter Goodyear was seated, et cetera, et cetera, it was a telling moment then. So I went over to Frank and said, read this. Mm. And we just sat there in awe for a long time.
Well, listen, we're all just praying that the Attorney General, New South Wales Attorney General, will see his way clear to reversing his decision to not reverse the judge's decision. I'm getting myself tangled in knots.
He can act a special power to allow that to go to trial. It wasn't enacted, so I think that there is a push now for that to happen.
Yeah,
I think it in the light of justice. As I said, put it before a jury.
Yeah. It's frustrating. Let's not guess. Let's not guess what we reckon will happen, so you know, I'm not going to bother. No, well, let's bother. Yeah?
Yeah, well, look, Ricky's taking the charge up on this. Mm. And as I say, it's got to be driven. Mm. I think at the end of the day, I thought the investigation was a thorough investigation for what we did and the resources that we had. There was only the two of us.
Sounds like it was like incredible.
There was a number of officers who did some good work over the previous years on that brief, and which allowed us then to, when we got the brief, to say, well, we don't have to do that. It's been done now, which gave us a little bit more time to do a few other things. But I thought the aspect of interviewing Mavis Goodyear was very, very important. And you just don't get the feel and the sense of an interview if you're doing it over via a Zoom meeting or over a telephone. It had to be that I had to go and see her personally. And, well, you know, we laughed about it. We thought, oh, they're going to send two cops over to middle-aged cops over to London, you know.
Yeah.
But I thought the case and the And I thought it was very important for the brief. And we went and we eventually went over there and did what we had to do.
And look what you achieved.
Yeah. Brilliant. That was that Mavis Goodyear interview when she recalled that that was worth everything going over there for and coming back.
Yeah, I'll be shocked to the back teeth if this doesn't get some movement and some change. It's just so well, the other, you know, Fairy Meadow and the case is excellent. God, that confession's unreal.
Yeah, and
it's terrifying. He's a child sex offender back in the community. He's never left the community.
Well, the whole thing about that interview was that everything that he said was true.
Yeah.
We couldn't prove a lie.
Yeah.
Even to the aspect where one of the telling aspects of that record of interview, and we reenacted this, by the way, with the we did some laser sightings at the old surf club where the wall had been extended out from where the door to the change room was. Now, so we did some pretty tricky work with our scientific people, and we actually pinpoint where he was seated when he said, "I couldn't see them where they were going to, but I presume they were going into the entrance to the men's changing room because that's the direction they were headed." Yeah. Because he said, because there was a wall blocking my view. So we went back to the original footings of where that wall was.
God.
And were able to do by laser sighting. In fact, that he was actually telling the truth. You couldn't see the doorway to the change room from where he was seated.
Even the crows circling at the place where he said he left the remains, and his misunderstanding of the geography and misnaming of places.
Yes.
Unbelievable, isn't it?
Yeah.
It's so perfect.
And for someone to say he's never been there in his life before.
And he was there for the walkthrough. It's ridiculous.
Yeah, well.
Thank you so much.
My pleasure, ladies.
Thanks to our guest, Damien Loon. If you haven't already, make sure you listen to the excellent BBC podcast Fairy Meadow. Ricky Nash is pleading with the New South Wales Attorney General, Mark Speakman, to reverse his decision not to intervene to force the prosecution of the man he believes murdered his sister. The Attorney General still has the power to bring Mercury before the courts again. There's information in our show notes and on how to contact Mr. Speakman to let him know your thoughts. There is also a $1 million reward from New South Wales Police for information about Cheryl's abduction and murder. Thank you to the following patrons: Debbie Esquilant, Soleil Heritage, Anne C, Elizabeth Fetos, Sally Colpoys, and Jasmine Kosicki. Thank you for listening. We'll be back next week.
This has been another Smart Fella production in conjunction with the Acast Creator Network.
Tired of ads interrupting your gripping investigations? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Ads shouldn't be the scariest thing about true crime. Start listening by downloading the Amazon Music app for free. Or go to amazon.com/truecrimeadfree. That's amazon.com/truecrimeadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Need new glasses or want a fresh new style? Warby Parker has you covered. Glasses start at just $95, including anti-reflective, scratch-resistant prescription lenses that block 100% of UV rays. Every frame's designed in-house with a huge selection of styles for every face shape. And with Warby Parker's free home try-on program, you can order 5 pairs to try at home for free. Shipping is free both ways, too. Go to warbyparker.com/covered to try 5 pairs of frames at home for free. warbyparker.com/covered.
Planning for your next trip?
Elevate your travel style with Quince.
Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And is all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/pack for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Hey, everyone. Craig Robinson here. I want you to check out the Ways to Win podcast, brought to you by Ford and the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. On Ways to Win, Coach Cal and I will discuss leadership lessons we've learned. We know all about the days spent perfecting your craft outside of the limelight and have knowledge to share about how strength, inspiration, encouragement, and adaptability are the key ingredients to drive toward your dreams. And those same ingredients can be found in the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. So check out my podcast, Ways to Win, and also check out the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. Learn more at Ford.com. Built Ford tough, built Ford proud.
Australian True Crime. The live show is coming.